This is Heidi Taylor at the Midwest Genealogy Center interviewing Michael Alexander, a.k.a. Big Al. All right, welcome. So, clearly, you did serve in the military. What branches were you in?
Army.
Army? And you said National Guard?
I joined the National Guard after I got out of Vietnam.
Okay. What year did you start in the service?
1966, I got drafted.
Okay.
And went to basic training at Fort Leonard, Missouri.
Wow, that was close.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We used to call it Fort Lawson Woods because we were found it, lost it.
Found it, lost it.
And then they sent me to Fort Ord, California to field wireman training. And then they sent me to jump school. And I told the guy, I said, how'd I get in this? And he said, well, you signed that paper, didn't you? I said, well, they put papers in front of me at the induction center, so I guess I did.
What unit were you in?
I went to Vietnam.
Okay.
And I was with the Maricao Division. And the Maricao Division, they don't have a home base. Basically, they're put together and deprogrammed overseas. They fought during World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. The Maricao Division does.
Okay, and what does that division do?
It's a 23rd Infantry Division, what it is.
Okay.
And they don't have a home port like Big Red One or some of the other groups do.
Right.
And that's what makes it so special.
So you were deployed to Vietnam what year?
Right after jump school, they sent me to Vietnam, and that's 1969. And I was with the 382nd Artillery. They told me I was going to be a forward observer helper. And I ended up being forward observer because I couldn't keep an officer. They kept getting shot at, so they kept transferring to S3 or S4 or some cushy job. So I was doing an officer job as a Spec 4.
Wow.
So I was offered a field grade commission by a two-star general, and he came to my office, and I told him, I don't want to be no officer, and I'm getting shot at enough now.
Your COs were getting shot at that much more. That's not good.
So I told him, he said, anything you need then? He said, I'm getting intelligence reports from this office here. And I told him, I said, sir, if you notice, it says Spec 4 Alexander down at the bottom. And he goes, yeah, come think about it, it does. He said, anything you need, just call me in July and I'll send it to you. I said, well, you know, being a listen man, I can't get bourbon. I said, I'd like to have a case of bourbon. And 2 days later, it got flown in, and some guy brought it up and laid it on my door. There, I had in the S2 shop, you had to have a double door,
mm-hmm.
so nobody was allowed in there.
Okay.
And they had a shelf on the bottom door, and the guy brought it up and says, you Big Al? I go, yeah. He said, well, I got a case of bourbon flew in here for you from somebody in July. I knew it was from the general. So I pulled out a bottle of bourbon, handed this young guy, and I said, here, you go ahead and get drunk tonight. I know it's hard to come by.
Do you remember what that general's name was?
I don't remember his name. It's been so many years ago.
That would be
fun. He was
fun.
A two-star general, but anything I needed, I just call him and get it.
So how long were you there?
I was there, the first tour I was there for 12 months. And they wanted me to re-up for 4 years. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll re-up for a year and a month if I get to go home for 30 days. And I came back, I come home for 30 days and then came back for the second tour. So I was there for until 71.
Wow.
And I'll tell you stories about coming home. I came home downtown airport, that before KCI was finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in a cab, and the guy says, where are you stationed? I said, I just got back from Vietnam. And he turned around and spit on my uniform.
Oh, my.
So I got home and got out, got my duffel bag, my AWOL bag out, and I just walked off in the house. And he's out on the street hollering, I want my $2.80. Of course, that's when cabs are cheap.
Right.
And I didn't say anything to him. And my dad said, what's wrong with this guy out here? I said, he wants his money. I said, he spit on me. I'm not going to give him no money.
No.
And of course, my mom and dad lived in a neighborhood off of Trimmer Road and White down there. And It's an older neighborhood, so somebody called the police. And the cops showed up, and my dad was sitting on the front porch, and he says, "What's wrong?" He says, the cop says, "What's wrong?" I said, "That cab driver spit on my son's uniform." You know, and I'm sitting there inside the storm door, and the cop said, "Okay." So he went out and told that cab driver, he said, "If you don't get off my, you get in your cab, get off my street, I'm going to arrest you for parking tickets I know you got, and I'm going to arrest you for busted
assault.
Taillight." He said, "I don't have a busted taillight." So the cop pulled out his nightstick and hit his taillight and busted it out. He said, "Now you do."
Oh, my.
So the guy left. The cab driver left. And the cop walked up, and I walked out on the front porch behind my dad. And the cop says, "I want to thank you for your service." I told the cop, "I'm just home for 30 days. I'm going back to Nam for another year." And the cop looked at me and says, "I was over the trip 3 years ago in Vietnam. I want to thank you for your service."
Oh, wow.
I shook his hand. I said, "I want to thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Being a Vietnam vet, and I want to thank you for your service being a good cop."
Yeah.
You know, for running this guy off, running this guy off for me.
Spitting on people is not
and
like
I,
that.
I told him, I said, "I ain't never going to have it do again. If anybody ever spits on my uniform again, I'm gonna tear his head off."
Yeah.
You know, he said, "I don't blame you. I would do it too."
Yeah.
"And I want to thank you for what you did for me."
Yeah.
And he left, and I went back in the house. But ever since then, I've never had any problem with it since then. But if I ever did, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully now we're to a point where.
But the second trip, when I went back to Vietnam, I was back in country about a month. And we got a new S3 major and S3 captain. And the colonel says, "Big Al, can you run them out to the Arvin compound?" I said, "Yeah, I can take them out to Arvin compound in a Jeep." And we pulled out of the base, went through the village, and turned on Highway 1 there. And the major said, "I'm going to go down this road right behind the village." I said, "Sure, there's something wrong with that road. Because when you've been in combat, you get the seventh sense.
Mm-hmm.
If something's wrong with something, you know." I kept telling him, "Sure, there's something wrong with that road. Take my word for it." And he kept arguing with me, and I said, "Sure, there's something wrong with that road." Anyway, he said, "I don't care, I'm a major." I said, "Sure, I don't care, but there's something wrong with that road. We just shouldn't go down there. We need to go a quarter of a mile up to the main road to the Arvin compound. And Arvin's a South Vietnamese soldier, the ones we're fighting with." Anyway, he kept arguing with me. I said, "Okay, we'll go down that road then." Got down there about 200 yards, went up a 100-pound landmine on his side. And all I can remember is it's a big blast. It blew me out of the Jeep, and I just had a piece of shrapnel still in my leg up here, and then one was in my knee. I was unconscious. I was in a coma for 21 days.
Wow.
21 days later, I gained consciousness. The colonel come in. He says, "Here's your Purple Heart, but it's not going to be on your medical records or your military records, because we sent you there. You shouldn't have been there." Anyway, he says, here's your paper to go home. I said, "Colonel, no." I said, "What happened to the major?" He said, "Well, we scraped him and the captain in the back seat off and sent him home in metal coffins."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, I'm sorry about that," but I kept telling him that you're not going to say the word I caught him.
Right, right.
That there was something wrong with that road. But you see, you got to be in combat for about a month to get this to 7 cents, and you never lose it. Anyway, I said, "I'm sorry to hear it, but that's what happens." I says, he said, "Here's your papers to go home." I said, "No, Colonel, I got 11 months to go on my second tour. I'm going back to work." He said, "Well, whatever you want to do." So I finished my 11 months of my second tour, and then I came home. But I worked with the 5th Arvin Division over there, and I was along the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Cambodia and Laos.
Oh, wow.
That's where I was at.
Wow.
I was their forward observer. And when they told me, when I first got there in Vietnam, when they told me I was going to be a helper to the forward observer, and I told you I couldn't keep any officers, so I was doing the officer job at Spec 4.
Mm-hmm.
I went in the chapel and sit for a couple hours. I was basically thinking to God, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a being a port observer or being a helper.
Right.
And I just kind of sitting there asking. I said, God, what should I do? And there was nobody else in the building but me. And the building probably a little bigger than this room, you know, not real big.
Right.
Anyway, I heard a voice telling me, you got to take care of your own people.
Yeah.
And there was nobody else in the building.
Yeah.
And I tell that story, you know, and people think, well, you're crazy.
No.
But it wasn't. It was God talking to me, telling me I got to take care of my own people.
Mm-hmm.
And these orphans were my own people. This was my responsibility to take care of these orphan soldiers.
Right.
And it was really weird, you know. And I tell people that, they think,
no, I think it's fantastic.
Crazy,
yeah.
You know.
It's fantastic.
And that's what I was doing. I was taking care of the orphans and, you know, whoever else was with me out
mm-hmm.
there. But wherever they went, I had to go. So 90% of the time, we were flown into Cambodian and Laos and out to Ho Chi Minh Trail. And that was their job, and I had to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
But all my records show South Vietnam, don't show Cambodian and Laos.
Yeah, and I hate that they did that.
In the 2 years I was over there, I lost 80% of my unit over there. And that's the orphans. And they were good soldiers. These guys were gung-ho. They would charge tree lines and everything else. I said, no, no, come back, come back. Let me drop napalm on them or something like that and get rid of them. They would go to a tree line. But I was responsible killing over. I had to go ahead and I dropped napalm, whatever I dropped on the enemy. I'd go out and count body counts. And you don't count arms and legs, heads around all the place. You count the main torso.
Wow.
Now this is men, women, and children. And children, and I'm talking about teenagers, they'll shoot you just like a man would.
Okay.
And you don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
Women would carry guns. They'll shoot you just like a man would. You don't feel sorry for them.
No.
And I had over, in the 2 years I was over there, I killed over 2,000 enemy.
Wow.
I was responsible for it. But my shrink asked me to be at the VA, asked me, does it bother you? I said, not really. It was a job I had to do,
mm-hmm.
and I did it. And I did it, I think it as a job.
Well, and that,
you know, that's
that
the best way you
keeps
do it.
You in a better mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what bothers me is worse than people I actually shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I used to have nightmares when I first come home from Vietnam. Now, if I get stressed out or tired, mm-hmm. I could be talking, you know, see a face of somebody I actually shot.
Right.
You know, come up like next to you. But that's one thing I have
a problem with. So that trauma
still happens. Yeah, trauma's right now. But I got post-traumatic stress, but I deal with my post-traumatic stress. I'm not like a lot of guys that take antidepressants and stuff. My shrink says, you do a good job of taking care of your problems. I said, well, you got to live with it.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it.
No, I have not met a vet that doesn't have PTSD issues.
Yeah, but mine's real mild because I dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a job I had to do, and I did it.
Yeah.
But actually, the people I actually shot bothered me worse than the ones I blew up.
Yeah.
Because I didn't actually blow them up. I just somebody else did it for me.
You just did the order.
Yeah, I just did the order to do it. You know, aircraft or shipped off the coast or artillery if we were close enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just actually had to go out and get a body count to call it in.
Wow.
So that's something you have to live with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was my job for 2 years over there.
And so when did you finally come home?
Yeah, I came home after 71 and I sat around for a year, got bored. I was working and I thought, well, I'm going to go join the National Guard. So I went over to 18th Ridge and joined the Kansas National Guard. And they were the transportation group. And the first month I showed up over there, they just sit around all weekend in the bleachers, did nothing. So I thought the next month I showed up, I went down and told the first sergeant, I said, if you ain't got a job for me being prior service, I didn't have to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want out of here if you ain't got a job for me. So I got a cook opening up here. I said, well, heck, I'll take it. So they said I was kind of like an OJT cook. But my mom and dad owned two laundromats. My dad owned two laundromats, and he worked for the railroad. So they were busy all the time. My mom worked both laundromats.
Right.
One was a self-service laundry, where you bring your laundry, and she'd do it for you, and then
mm-hmm.
put it in brown paper and stuff. So she worked there all day, and then she'd go close it up and then move down to Corn Operation Laundry and help close the dry cleaners up. And my dad worked for railroads, so he worked nights and then he'd sleep sleep in and walk, when in the morning, and he'd go down to both laundry mats and do, you know, do repair work on the machines. So we never seen my mom and dad very much from sunup to sundown.
No.
So me and my brother, he was 5 years older than me, so we took care of ourselves. We learned how to cook and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's how I grew up.
Yeah. Was your brother in the military also?
He was in Korea, in Korea and Germany. He spent, he joined for 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and he was in Korea and Germany after the Korean War.
Right.
And stuff. And then he went to Germany. He was like in Korea for 3 years. Then he went to Germany for 3 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Is there any of the people that you served with, are they still around? Are you able
I to... have never run into anybody. I run into guys from, like in my, I belong to Vietnam Veterans of America 317. There was two or three guys down there was in the AmeriCal division, but they were in before I was.
Okay.
So I've never run, ever run into anybody that was in the same time I was.
Hmm.
I did run in some out to Blue Springs when he had a moving wall out there.
Mm-hmm.
I run into a couple of the Arvins that I was with in Vietnam. They come over, I guess they come over during the boat people,
mm-hmm.
and they were down there in their uniforms. They had a bunch of Arvins showed up down there, and they give them that medal that they give all the guys out there at the Blue Springs.
Right.
And they run into me. I was sitting there on my scooter at the wall, and they were looking at the Vietnam Wall, and they come walking by. A guy looked, a couple of them looked at me and says, "Oh, you Big Al?" I said, "Why?" He said, "We was with the 5th Army Division." I really didn't recognize them, but they recognized me. And he said, "Well, you ain't changed any at all, Big Al. Just got a little older." And he said, "We were with the 5th Army Division." They had, I could see the patch. I said, "Yeah, all right." And they said, "Yeah, you was our forward observer." So when they give him the medal over there, I asked the guy who was giving out the medals, "Can I put these medals on these two guys?"
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Yeah, you can."
Oh, wow.
So I got to decorate these two guys with
medals.
That's
fantastic.
So that was kind of neat. It made me feel good, it made them feel good.
Well, yeah.
And we had seen each other for quite a few
years.
Many, many years. Yeah. So I got to do that for them.
Yeah, well, 67.
And it made them feel good, too.
67 is 50 years to this year, so yeah. It's been a while.
But, you know, like I said, I was in the National Guard for about 16 and a half years, and I should have finished out 20, but there was too much problem with the couple of folks over there in the National Guard. They were 6 year wonders. They were telling officers to kiss where the sun don't set and everything, and all that. They was all they were doing, get them dishonorable discharge. And this ain't the military I grew up in, because
no.
I was in ROTC at Northeast for 4 years, and like I said, my dad was a World War II veteran. His brother was a World War II veteran, and both my grandpas, my first grandpa was a doughboy in World War I, and my grandma, after he passed away, my grandma, about 3 years, two or four years later, got remarried to another guy who was a doughboy, and
wow.
I mean, all my whole family has been in the military.
Wow.
And my grandson, he just got out of the military not too long ago, and he was 4 years in the 6 years in the military, and right now he's a fireman out here in Independence, so
wow.
He's using his GI Bill for that.
Yeah, well that's so, nice to have him as a fireman here.
Yeah,
we definitely appreciate that too.
So he's doing pretty good, and right now he's getting ready to be a fire marshal here.
Wow.
So he's using his GI Bill for that. So
mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
I'm proud of him.
yep. So what do you do in your spare time now?
I work with veterans organizations and honoring veterans. Right now I have documents to give out to Vietnam vets every time I see one, and then we got the 50-year pin of the 50-year pin we give out. I give out in my truck when I see them.
Wow.
If I see a Vietnam vet, I stop and give them a 50-year anniversary thing that's signed by Obama. Yeah. And then my American Legion group, I give them
wow.
a thank you letter from them. And then I give them pins. I keep them in my truck.
That's good.
Donna, you know, because a lot of guys don't get to events like this and stuff.
No, no. We do our best to honor, you know, the vets, yeah. But it's a one time a year from here, so.
Yeah, I do that and stuff. And yeah. I work with, like I said, I'm work with the American Legion and stuff, and the Riders, and then the Vietnam Veterans of America organization.
So you still keep busy.
I keep busy. Yeah, I don't just sit around. I'm on 100% disability.
Yeah.
Because I got Agent Orange sprayed on me and over there when I was in the jungle.
So
they didn't know we was down there.
Have they been able to determine anything more about how to test for the Agent Orange yet?
No, I just like I said, I'm 100% disabled because I got type 2 diabetic because of it. And of course, that's turned into neuropathy and everything, so I can't walk real good anymore because of it.
Yeah. So, well, we so appreciate you being here.
Well, I feel fantastic. I've showed up quite a bit since he was out in Smithville. He's got there for that one, and then went to Platte City for 2 years. Now they got it up here for 2 years. So
yeah,
far.
I didn't realize it was the 19th year until I heard them talking today.
Yeah,
so it's very fun. I've been doing this for 3 years now, so.
Yeah, I like it up. I like doing this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, thank you, Big Al.
All right.
I'm gonna shut this off now.